Orleans after Katrina and organizing in the face of a complete militarized state to take care of one another and make sure that people got the basic necessities met. So, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King called it the beloved community. We can't do this without one another. We are all we really have.
Lisa Fithian, thank you so much for joining us. And people, look for part two online at democracynow.org under web exclusives. Lisa Fithian, longtime organizer, her new book, Shut It Down, Stories from a Fierce, Loving Resistance. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for your 5 o'clock news after these announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Festival of Nations on Saturday, September 7th, 11 a.m. at the Extended Home LLC building in Portland. The Festival of Nations celebrates and embraces the diversity of the Division Midway District of Portland. There will be cultural foods, vendors, activities, community services, and more. Again, that's the Festival of Nations on Saturday, September 7th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Extended Home LLC building, 14410 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found on the kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio wants to hear from you, our dear listeners and members, about why you support KBOO, why you listen, and why others should support the radio station. Please call 503-231-8032, extension 302, and tell us your name, what KBOO means to you, and why do you continue to support KBOO. Again, that's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thank you for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland police are searching for a man suspected of causing the 82nd Street fire.
Recent vaping deaths could be linked to contaminants.
And in international news, former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has died.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 6, 2019. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne. Yesterday, a Multnomah County grand jury declined to indict two people accused of assaulting a man wearing a Make America Great Again hat outside a bar in southeast Portland, and the case has been dismissed. According to the man's account, he was on a date with his wife when he was attacked for wearing a MAGA hat. Images of the hat-wearing man, Luke Lenzner, and his injuries got a lot of attention online. However, his account was called into question after video surfaced of him at the bar. In the video, Lenzner is seen attempting to instigate a fight with bar patrons. The patrons are heard repeatedly refusing, telling Lenzner that no one wants to fight him and that he should leave. Lenzner blamed Portland's, quote, radical political leanings for the outcome of his case. He told the Oregonian, quote, in any other city, they would have been indicted.
After the damaging fire on 82nd Street in Northeast Portland, police are searching for a potential suspect. Police officials are currently searching for a man riding a, quote, uniquely colored bicycle who was seen on the night of the August 26th fire near Madison High School and Glenhaven Park. The potential suspect's bike is black with pink front forks and a red chain. According to the Portland police, it's believed the four-alarm fire was set intentionally. The damages were incredibly significant, impacting 12,000 homes with electricity shutdowns and destroying 50 parked cars. For information that leads to an arrest, Crime Stoppers of Oregon is offering up to $2,500 in cash for rewards.
Starting next week, Senator Ron Wyden will introduce a new legislation to tax e-cigarettes. Wyden's announcement comes after an outbreak of lung disease and death of a vape user. During his announcement at the Multnomah County Health Department, Wyden stressed the imperative need to discourage teenagers from using e-cigarettes. Wyden cited a report that states that 40% of high schoolers have reportedly used e-cigarettes. This attention to the public, to public health, particularly young adults, encouraged medical professionals to share cautionary health information related to vaping. According to one emergency room doctor interviewed by Oregon Live, quote, "One pot of e-cigarette Juul is equal to the nicotine of 20 cigarettes." Senator Wyden's proposed plan would tax e-cigarettes at a rate of 65% of the wholesale price. The tax would extend to also to cigarettes and cigars, charging a tax of $2 per pack of cigarettes and increasing the tax on cigars from 50 cents to $1. While Oregon officials set up plans to make it fiscally less accessible to buy tobacco products, other states such as Michigan have fully banned flavored e-cigarettes.
An ethanol facility in Klatskanai is now one step closer to receiving approval to use equipment from its renewable fuel operation to transport crude oil via the Columbia River. Spokesperson for the Columbia River Keepers, Dan Saris, expressed that from what he could understand, the issue was that the facility would be transporting the raw materials that would then be turned into crude oil. Bob Salinger, the director of conservation at Portland Audubon, says, quote, "The state of Oregon continues to greenlight a project they know will put our communities at real and immediate risk. All we are getting right now are bureaucratic excuses." The Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, issues permits based on information provided by applications and maintains control through the regulations and guidelines that are appropriate for the type of facility that's applying. Global Partners Vice President of External Communications, Katie Kearns, says the company is focused on meeting the Northwest region's clean fuel requirements. She states that, quote, "Global Partners is pleased that the Department of Environmental Quality has issued this permit on its merits."
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's The Struggle. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy at 62 degrees, with a 10% chance of rain. Tomorrow's weather is cloudy in the morning with thunderstorms later in the day, with a high of 73 and a low of 60. Today in history, in 1965, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Voting Rights Act into law, which prohibited radical racial discrimination in voting. The quote of the day is from President Johnson, who said at the signing, quote, "Today is a triumph for freedom as huge as any victory that has ever been won on any battlefield. The vote is the most powerful instrument ever devised by man for breaking down injustice and destroying the terrible walls which imprison men because they are different from other men."
Hurricane Dorian has finally gone ashore in North Carolina as a Category 1 storm. The southeastern United States has been experiencing unrelenting winds of 90 miles per hour and heavy flooding. Rain has been so heavy that many South Carolinians have found safety in the attics of their homes. So far, 4 deaths have been reported in the U.S. due to the storm. Local government response in North Carolina has been arranging helicopters for those wanting to evacuate. That's particularly necessary for the island of Ocracoke, which under normal weather conditions is only accessible by boat or air. Meanwhile, in the Bahamas, the death toll has now reached 30, which is also in addition to the experiencing of devastating damage there. The fiscal loss for businesses in the Bahamas is estimated at $7 billion. The destruction wreaked onto Bahamians has resulted in many family members left unaccounted for and thousands made homeless. Executive Director of the Grand Bahama Port Authority, Rupert Hayward, said, quote, "There is an immediate need to provide water and food. A lot of supplies were completely washed away."
Zimbabwe's longtime ex-president Robert Mugabe has died at age 95. Mugabe was a critical part of the liberation of Zimbabwe from the white minority government of Rhodesia and has been celebrated as a symbol of African liberation. After a 7-year-long guerrilla war, Zimbabwe gained its independence in 1980, and Mugabe was elected as its first prime minister and later appointed himself executive president. Though he is known for once remarking, quote, "Only God who appointed me will remove me," Mugabe was ousted by the military in 2017 over fears that he was grooming his wife to take over his power. In the beginning of his rule, he expanded secondary education, making Zimbabweans some of the best educated in southern Africa. He offered reconciliation to the white minority. That said, during his 37 years in power, he earned a reputation as a strongman leader, to some, a tyrant, by implementing brutal repression on his political opponents and disastrous economic policies.
According to reports earlier this week, the White House has reassigned U.S. Asylum Division Chief John Lafferty to a Virginia processing center. Starting September 10th of this year, Lafferty will leave his former position of 6 years and become the deputy director of the Potomac Service Center in Arlington, Virginia. In his new role, Lafferty will be responsible for overseeing a staff that processes permanent resident applications as well as international student work permits. The White House's decision comes as President Trump is working to dismantle the asylum system for immigrants and seeking protections from facing persecution in their home countries. President Trump has made claims that many immigrants do not have the standards to reach those standards of credible fear claims for seeking asylum. Lafferty has also been reassigned after criticizing the Trump administration in July for its approach to changing immigration policy. One current DHS official, according to Politico, states that, quote, the White House blamed Lafferty for an inability to toughen asylum standards. Lafferty will be replaced by Andrew Davidson, who is currently the Deputy Associate Director of Fraud Detection and National Security.
President Trump has recently stated that he is considering revoking California's authority to set state standards for tailpipe pollution. California's current standards are higher than federal regulations and in line with other states. President Trump's statement is amid reports that major automakers have expressed to the president that they do not want rollbacks of pollution standards. According to the New York Times, four major automakers have signed a deal with California pledging to abide by the state's stricter standards if the national rollback goes through. The Obama administration, on the other hand, set regulations requiring that the automakers build vehicles with no more than 54.5 miles per gallon of fuel economy by 2025. President Trump's proposal would cut Obama's regulation to 37 miles per gallon. In opposition toward the Trump administration's plan, California's Attorney General Xavier Becerra has stated he will sue any attempt that threatens California's legal ability to set its own pollution standards. Becerra said, quote, California will continue to advance towards a cleaner future.
Well, it should be obvious by now it's hurricane season on the eastern seaboard, and for many residents, that means being prepared for emergency evacuations. These mandated evacuations can be very difficult for people with disabilities. Dr. Anthony Leitzowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leitzowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Emergency evacuations can be difficult and dangerous, especially for people living with disabilities.
For, say, somebody with a physical disability who can't evacuate a building if the power goes out or if there's a natural disaster because the elevators go down.
Alex Guinness is a policy and research specialist with the World Institute on Disability, a nonprofit that works on disability rights issues.
I personally have a spinal cord injury that I've had for about 15 years now. I have no use of my legs. I have limited use of my arms. If there's a natural disaster, then I'll need to figure out how to evacuate. I will need to find accessible sheltering, which, you know, emergency shelters aren't always readily and fully accessible.
People with other types of disabilities face different challenges. For example, blind or deaf people may struggle to locate shelters or communicate with emergency personnel. Guinness says as climate change makes extreme weather more common, cities and states should work to understand the specific ways that people with disabilities are affected. Then they can develop inclusive preparedness plans that address the needs of everyone. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
A new bipartisan effort is underway to investigate tech giants Facebook and Google. Attorney generals in 8 states, both Republican and Democrat, have announced their inquiry into Facebook, and 8 others are looking at Google. The companies have caught the attention of both sides of the aisle. Conservatives complain that social media platforms are biased against them, while liberals say the platforms are barely policed for right-wing conspiracy theories and racism. The tech giants will be investigated under antitrust regulations. Antitrust regulations are intended to keep companies from becoming too big or too powerful, because they may use that power to reduce competition and drive prices up unfairly. This inquiry goes beyond that, however, as states are interested in how the companies handle consumer data, ad targeting practices, and their role as gatekeepers of communication. Representative David Sicilian, a Democrat from Rhode Island and leader of the House Antitrust Subcommittee, said to the New York Times, quote, The dominance of these giant technology companies warrants a closer look. I'm glad that members of both parties understand that.
The Navajo Nation has announced its support for the Equality Act, which protects people from discrimination based on their sexual orientation. Antonio Gonzalez has more on this story and others with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation Council voted Thursday to support the U.S. Equality Act. The bill in Congress would expand protections against discrimination on the basis of a person's sexual orientation or gender identity in areas including employment, housing, and education. Advocates see it as a step toward recognition and LGBTQ rights on the Navajo Nation. Alray Nelson is the founder of Diné Equality and the executive director of Diné Pride.
It was amazing to be in that historic council chambers where in years past, the Navajo Nation Council had said some very homophobic and transphobic things about our community. And now, 10, 15 years later, since 2005, they took and passed this legislation.
Nelson sees the council's support of the Equality Act as a step for the tribe to allow same-sex marriage, which was prohibited in 2005.
We are already identified lawmakers that are going to introduce legislation before the fall and winter session of 2019. You have tribal lawmakers on Navajo that are already doing this work. And so Diné Equality, Diné Pride is going to be working with these entities and to ensure that we bring our LGBTQ relatives to the table and that we push forward various types of legislation.
The U.S. House passed the Equality Act and it's now in the Senate. The Navajo Council added its support with 16 votes, no opposition. It authorizes the Speaker of the Council, the Tribal President, and the Navajo Nation Washington office to advocate on behalf of the Navajo Nation to support the bill. Meanwhile, candy may still make its way into the Navajo Nation's Fair Parade Saturday in Window Rock, Arizona, after being banned by President Jonathan Nez. Nez banned throwing candy at the parade as part of health and wellness initiatives and instead asked participants to hand out fruits and school supplies. The Navajo Council sought a legal opinion, and on Thursday, the tribe's Office of Legislative Council stated candy can be distributed during the parade. The council and legislative branch will have a float in the parade. It's up to the council delegates and legislative branch programs and departments to decide whether to distribute any food item or candy. School officials on a Montana reservation are concerned about the education of students. School was closed on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation this week due to water issues. As Olivia Reingold reports, it's part of an ongoing streak of water shortages that have caused the Bureau of Indian Education School to regularly shut its doors.
When Principal Melvin Mitchell found out that the Northern Cheyenne Tribal School would have to send kids home early on Tuesday because of low water pressure, he wasn't surprised.
That happens on and off periodically, and it's something that we've dealt with off and on since I've been there for the past 2 years.
He says the school has to shut down 12 to 15 days a year because of problems with water and other maintenance issues. A source at the Northern Cheyenne Utility Commission, which oversees Busby's water supply, says the problem was two defunct pumps. The source says the 10-year-old pumps were both replaced for $10,000. Principal Mitchell again.
It is very frustrating in terms of students missing instructional days and not taking advantage of that core instruction that they need to improve our assessment scores.
In the most recent accreditation report from Montana's Office of Public Instruction, the elementary, middle, and high school branches of the Northern Cheyenne Tribal School are marked as deficiency status, primarily because of student performance. But Mitchell says there's only so much he can do, especially when the school already has an average of up to 15 snow days a year. For National Native News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
After recent mass shootings on Sunday, the state of Texas responded by loosening its gun laws. This decision comes just barely a month after the multiple mass shootings in Texas that resulted in over 20 deaths. In just the month of August, 53 people have died in mass shootings across the United States. According to reports, Texas, quote, has seen four of the 10 deadliest mass shootings in modern history. Texas' new law means making it easier to carry guns in public spaces such as schools, apartment buildings, churches, and disaster zones. In schools, Texas lawmakers removed former limitations on the number of designated armed faculty and staff members. The law had restricted only one designated staff per 200 students or one armed staff person per school building. At the start of the new school year on Sunday, the limitations on the number of designated armed faculty has been removed. Currently, with revised laws, places of worship are now considered private property and thus allowed to have firearms on the premise. New laws even allow a citizen who is licensed to carry to trespass on private property as long as, quote, the holder promptly leaves after being asked.
After a recent legal victory, Ohio is expected to proceed with a massive purge of voter registration. That's despite the fact that some voters on the list were active and eligible. We have this story and more from the Public News Service. The Public News Service has bureaus in 36 states dedicated to news in the public interest.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, September 6, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. A massive voter purge anticipated today in the Midwest, plus an asylum seekers' hunger strike, is now into day 60. Topping our news, after scoring a victory in court, the Ohio Secretary of State's office expected to follow through today on a massive voter registration purge.
The purge is happening despite discovering mistakes on the list released by Secretary of State Frank LaRose of roughly 235,000 voters at risk of losing their registration. Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters of Ohio says the list erroneously includes names of some voters who were actually eligible to vote.
Thousands of individuals on the list had voted as recently as 2018 and by no means should be removed. Others may not have gotten proper notification because of discrepancies between county's list and the Secretary of State LaRose's voter lookup website.
This week, a U.S. District Court judge denied a request to temporarily halt the removal process, noting that LaRose has been transparent in releasing the registration list and restored registrants who were eligible. Nearly 12,000 people on the list updated their registration information and won't be removed. Miller says voting rights groups appreciate the Secretary of State's efforts to ensure a quality review of the rolls, but contend it wasn't as in-depth as what they'd prefer.
At the end of the day, the buck stops with the secretary. Both in federal law and state law, it is the secretary's job to make sure that voter rolls are accurate. And that includes making sure that people are not wrongfully removed through this purge policy.
This story was produced in association with Meeting the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation. I'm Mary Sherman.
And today marks day 60 of a hunger strike by three political refugees from India detained for more than a year in El Paso at an ICE facility.
The policy of indefinite detention began under the Obama administration and has continued under President Donald Trump. Previously, most asylum seekers were released. Margaret Brown Vega with the group Advocate Visitors with Immigrants in Detention says the strikers all passed a test showing they have credible fear of violence if they return home.
All of these guys have sponsors. They don't have any kind of criminal history, so they pose no public threat. On that basis, they should be released to be able to pursue their asylum claim outside of detention.
The hunger strike was called to draw attention to poor conditions at the El Paso Service Processing Center, Vega says, and because of a deep desire to be free one way or another. A report in The Guardian revealed that three strikers were recently force-fed by ICE through plastic nasogastric tubes, a practice opposed by the American Medical Association and seen as torture by United Nations officials. ICE representatives maintained that force feeding is necessary to keep the men alive and is required by regulation. I'm Eric Galatis.
This is PNS. After historic floods this year, critics of new development on the Missouri River fear they could send the waters even higher. Here is Eric Teganoff.
On the banks of the Missouri near St. Louis, proposals for developments by Bangert Island and in Maryland Heights would be across the river from each other and built on important floodplains. As head of the Great Rivers Habitat Alliance, David Stokes says the science is clear that more building on the river's natural floodplain will exacerbate the region's flooding issues, but local governments seem to be taking little note.
One day I'm going to go to a city council meeting or a county commission meeting where they make the quorum by hooking together their lifeboats. And then at that meeting, while they're hooked together their lifeboats, I swear somebody's going to approve a new floodplain development proposal, and they're not going to see any connection.
Stokes likens this issue to a three-legged stool. Overdevelopment on the floodplain is one leg, making floods worse. The other two are too many levees, which channel the river faster and higher, and climate change, which causes more precipitation. Officials in Maryland Heights in St. Louis County still are looking for approval for development in an area that's flooded three of the last 5 years. This year, a nearby lake flooded when overflow couldn't be pumped back into the Missouri, where waters were too high. Officials say they plan to develop the area in a safe and smart manner, but Carolyn Pufault, who volunteers with the Missouri chapter of Sierra Club, thinks the plan is dangerous.
They're planning a housing development in an area where they know these houses are going to be flooded. They cannot plan for basements in these houses because of their groundwater. They realize they have a huge drainage issue in this area.
One solution, according to Stokes, is restoring as much floodplain and wetland acreage as possible.
That's no magic bean. You can't just put a few acres out there and expect the floods to go away. But in the long run, giving the rivers room to roam to connect to their natural floodplain is the only way that you're going to address these flooding issues.
And finally, people opposed to reviving the proposed nuclear waste dump at Yucca Mountain held a panel discussion Thursday night in East Las Vegas.
The plans were shelved during the Obama administration, but U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry has requested $116 million in this year's budget to restart licensing hearings on the project. Emily Woodall with the Nevada Conservation League says people need to stay engaged.
You know, Yucca has been in the background, but it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue, especially under the current administration.
Speakers at the event worried that nuclear waste could eventually leak into the water supply and said potential spills of nuclear material en route to Yucca Mountain could poison the environment and hurt tourism in the state. Officials in Nye County and Congressman Mark Amadei support the licensing process to determine if it would be safe. I'm Suzanne Potter.
I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
When e-cigarettes hit the market a decade ago, they were almost completely unregulated. It wasn't until just a few years ago that vaping products were even classified as tobacco products. In the meantime, according to a report from Kaiser Health News, billions of dollars worth of vaping products have been sold without having gone through the FDA, Food and Drug Administration's review process. This is one of the major reasons why health authorities across the country have been caught off guard by a wave of mysterious illnesses related to vaping. Today, the CDC reported 450 cases in 33 states since the outbreak was first noticed in late August. According to Kaiser's report, lung doctors have been catching cases like these for years but did not know who to report them to. Because the products had no definitive regulatory body, testing them and producing data sets of results that would be used to trace patterns. The case includes seizures and severe lung damage, often in people far younger than the average, and have resulted in several deaths as of Friday, including one in Oregon. The CDC is advising people to avoid e-cigarettes while the FDA is racing to test dozens of vape products to determine the source and cause of severe lung damage.
An Asian species of carp may pose a danger to habitats in the Great Lakes due to its voracious appetite for vegetation. Current Cast is a daily podcast that highlights issues affecting one of our most precious resources, fresh water, and they have more on the story.
Grass carp putting down roots. On this Current Cast. There are extensive efforts underway to keep invasive Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. But one variety has already been popping up there for over 30 years. For decades, people have used sterilized grass carp to control pond vegetation. Over time, some of those fish have escaped to the Great Lakes. Because they could not reproduce, it was not a major cause for concern. But John Detmers of the Great Lakes Fishery Commission says there's been an ominous change.
Reproducing grass carp have been found in the last 5 years in Lake Erie.
That's alarming because a growing population of the voracious plant eaters could do tremendous damage to aquatic plants and fish habitat. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 6, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Sam Bowman and Janae Boyer. The producer is Claire Rashado, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Counterspin is next. Have a great night, everyone.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a UN panel has just announced that the U.S. could be deemed complicit in war crimes being carried out in Yemen. Third state parties, including the U.S., that supply weapons and other support, perpetuate the conflict, the panel said, and contribute to the immiseration of Yemen, where a near incomprehensible 80% of the population now require humanitarian aid. U.S. media convey images of Yemen's suffering, but you could think it was happening on Mars if the dots are not connected between the bombs and the hunger and the cholera and elected U.S. Congress members voting again and again to be part of it. We'll talk about how to change that with Hassan El Tayyab, legislative representative for Middle East policy at the Friends Committee on National Legislation.